Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to become another person? Actor Adrian Brody arguably has one of the most recognizable faces in Hollywood. The characters he takes on, though, bear almost no resemblance to one another, from a deeply disturbed Hamlet dweller in The Village to an action hero in King Kong to his Academy Award-winning turn as a Jewish musician trying to survive the horrors of the Warsaw Ghetto. In his newest film, Brody plays one of the title characters in Rian Johnson's con man comedy, The Brothers Bloom.
How'd you find me?
It's actually pretty simple. We're brothers, and I've come to the conclusion that you don't want out. You think you do, but you don't.
Where are we going?
New Jersey.
Let me grab my coat.
This will be the last one.
I'll never ask you to do another con again.
The largest private residence on the eastern seaboard, home of our final mark. Penelope Stamp lived at home her whole life.
So what kind of stuff do you do?
I collect hobbies.
We're taking a steamer at noon tomorrow off the docks.
It's like an adventure story.
What's the con?
We go to St. Petersburg. We are guys in a phony setup who then double-cross us and kill us all.
She drives off on the run from imaginary Russians.
And we keep her money.
How much?
$2.5 million.
You're a genius, Steven.
That is a trailer from The Brothers Bloom. The film opens in wide release at the end of May, but Adrian Brody is in town for a gala screening tonight that will open the 2009 AFI Dallas International Film Festival. We are thrilled to have him with us this afternoon. Adrian, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the kind words. And I think that was the first time I've heard a trailer of a film that I've been in. So
yeah, I guess you're not sitting there waiting for him.
Well, or listened, I mean, without picture. So that's it was interesting. Experience.
Do you hear different things in that than
So much is not vocalized. So it's interesting to. I know those moments, and it's kind of like a weird flashback of experiences. And not only do I play those moments, but those are days of my life, months of my life to accumulate that one little sound, series of sound bites. And so then I'm just saying it's a strange process to only hear your voice and not see the moment and the fact that it's out of context. It's just interesting.
Yeah, radios, we actually have a hard time sometimes picking clips because very often the very best scene in a film isn't all about the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So Rian Johnson had only directed one film before this one, Brick. Can you talk about what you saw in that told you, yeah, I want to work with this guy?
Well, Brick is extremely well done. Rian is a very intelligent and sensitive filmmaker. The writing is actually pretty spectacular in this film and in Brick. And I think what I liked about that, I mean, it probably was incredibly challenging to make that film. It was a very, very small budget, and but it just had a uniqueness. I mean, that Brick was basically a film noir set in a high school. And, I liked the writing style. And I actually was attracted to Brothers Bloom when I had read it on the heels of finishing Wes Anderson's Darjeeling Limited in India. And this kind of I was very open to the idea of continuing this kind of traveling journey and surreal, the way the characters existed in the world. They were very kind of heightened moments, and somewhat comedic. And it was just I wanted to kind of continue with that feeling.
And brother film after brother film, I guess.
That's true. I needed some brothers, I guess.
Yeah, I know that you're an only child. Is it any harder to portray the relationship of, say, brothers than it is to take on any other role that is full of experiences you've never had personally?
Not at all, because I think if you have love in your life or you have good friends, it's pretty similar. And if, obviously people disappoint you, there's also disappointment in brotherhood. And so, I mean, it's just... I think the wonderful thing about acting is incorporating and finding life experience that is completely unrelated to something, and finding the parallels and using that to find an honest emotion that you can relate to something that is very different. And that is very simple. That one's very simple. I think there are much greater things to tap into and much more difficult and challenging ones.
Are you a particular fan of the con man genre? Is it something you've liked over the years?
Yeah, I do like con man roles. I think they're exciting, and you know, it's kind of a thrill to share an inside knowledge with the audience. You know, there's something extra fun about that, because as the actor, you know what's happening, but you also have to not reveal it. It's kind of like, you know, I started doing magic when I was very young, and as a boy, and I can relate how that kind of was a stepping stone into acting. But I found a very distinct pleasure in fooling people in a way, not in manipulating them in a sense, but to be able to make someone believe something that wasn't happening was happening.
There's power in that.
Yeah.
For a little kid especially.
Absolutely.
Did you practice like in front of the mirror?
I guess so. I mean, it depends on the trick but you know, sleight of hand, for instance, is something that you probably have to repetition, and you have to just practice regularly. So I didn't sit in front of a mirror, but you practice a kind of hand maneuver over and over when you're sitting, you know, doing something else. You just kind of working with it.
Well, the interesting thing about that is, you know, a lot of kids want to do magic, but then they realize how much work it takes to actually learn the tricks, and then they quickly lose interest. Were you always very focused on whatever it was you got into?
That's interesting. I guess so, yeah. I guess I guess it becomes exciting when you can really do it well. And I guess I like to do things well, you know, but I think I was just passionate about it. I think, you know, you can pursue things with an endless amount of energy if you're enthusiastic about it. And acting and magic at that time were things that, you know, I kind of was fascinated with.
A lot of people think of great actors and they think, well, they're great performers, which obviously is true. But I'm wondering if we fail to appreciate how good actors are at just observing things in other people.
Yeah, I think it's a common misconception, and it does not discount the fact that there are some actors who are very much showmen and like to be the center of attention. but I consider myself relatively not necessarily introverted, but I'm you know, there are moments where I will gladly accept the stage, but it's not something that I really crave. What I do love is the process of absorbing life in a way. And it's interesting. My mother's a photographer, Sylvia Plahi. She's a very respected artist, and you know, she views the world in a very specific way, and I grew up going on assignments with her in New York City, and kind of I've noticed that she, you know, obviously has the camera to help her capture a moment and distill it and capture not just the apparent moment, but something that lies beneath that. And that's something that I try to do with my work in a way. I kind of, you know, absorb things in life and then try and, almost regurgitate them in another way and kind of have them become organic to me, even though they're not my experience. And that's kind of like capturing that image and saving it.
Do you have a sense that she was sort of deliberately training you to be a visual thinker when you were a kid, or is this something you just inherited from her?
No, she wasn't. I think you absorb a lot through osmosis, and you absorb a lot you know, I think it's pretty clear that we are a product of our environment. And I fortunately had the creative influences and patient and kind parents, and I also had the kind of cacophony of New York and the madness and the wild friends and all of that. So I think it was kind of a pretty perfect real childhood.
So when you're going through and creating a character before you ever get onto the set, beyond sort of understanding the time and place in which this person lived, what do you really want to know about them? Do you create a whole backstory? Are you okay with focusing yourself and your preparation only on the time that your character will experience within the film?
I think there's a responsibility to be honest and feel, you know, I think the beauty of film is, and it is challenging because it is piecemeal, but you are focusing on a moment to moment basis, whereas in a play, you are kind of responsible for the entire arc of that character every evening. I think you have a responsibility to know who you're playing and be able to respond as if you were that person in any situation. I think that gives you the freedom to separate yourself, first of all, from yourself. So I think the key is to not be self-conscious at all. And the further you separate yourself from the character, the easier it is to kind of lose yourself in that. But I think each project has a different level of responsibility, and some are easier to connect to, and some are much more difficult. I mean, in The Pianist, I had to do a tremendous amount of research and emotional connection to things that I obviously and was fortunate enough not to experience in my life. But I just did a comedy where I was a marijuana dealer. And
this is high school.
This is high school. Mm-hmm. And I knew people like that character, but I also could embellish that. And there was a playfulness in the dialogue. And so I think there's a different responsibility. And as long as you're connected and not kind of, I think all it comes down to is being present. And if you can be present as that character and feel connected to that character, then however you get there, you get there. And I've gone to acting school for years, and I think there is a lot of pressure on acting students to kind of follow guidelines to really, you know, what did your character eat for breakfast, and why did, you know, if you didn't, your character didn't get enough sleep that night before, he would behave in this way. And it's relevant, but I think you can get bogged down with rules. Whereas some things you just know, and that's okay.
Adrian Brody is my guest. He's in town for a screening at tonight's AFI Dallas International Film Festival of The Brothers Bloom. We'll return to our conversation in a moment.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening listening to an archive edition of Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is actor Adrian Brody. He is receiving the Star Award tonight at the AFI Dallas International Film Festival, and he will also attend the screening of his newest film, The Brothers Bloom. So this Star Award is sort of an achievement thing, not just for any one particular film. Looking at your bio, it seems as if you have worked pretty much every day since like 1988. Do you get antsy when you're not working?
Occasionally, less so than I used to. I mean, I think the dilemma for an actor is to find work, period. It's an incredibly competitive profession.
Ultimately, it's a freelance job.
You're freelancing, and there are a lot of people aspiring to do what you do, and there are, you know, the reality is there just aren't enough roles, and then when you couple that with your specificity and what you may be appropriate for, and there's very little out there, and I think there's this illusion, you know, when people do want to just become an actor, they, because there's a handful of people who are incredibly successful, you know, it looks like a piece of cake in a way. But so I think in the years as a struggling actor, you learn about that kind of you learn about being idle, first of all, because you know, even a working actor only works on a couple projects in a year, and they might take a few months or 9 months in the case of some films I've done, but less so. Anyway, that was my long-winded response, but less so. I feel really fortunate that I can take time to live my life and you know, make music and travel and not wait by the phone as much as I used to.
It must be interesting now that people are calling you, and they're probably seeking you for a lot more things than you could possibly do even if you wanted to. Is it harder to choose when you've got half a dozen great things that you might want to do?
Ultimately, no. No, it's not harder to choose. You know what speaks to you and what doesn't. And as I said, I'm grateful that people do consider me and submit material to me directly. Not most of those things don't necessarily speak to me. And just because there are opportunities out there doesn't mean that you should do them. And you have to have self-control, and you have to pace yourself, and you know, but when there's something great, unfortunately, it usually comes at the same time as something else that really appeals to you. So then you have the dilemma of doing one thing or not being available for the one that came because you're already doing something else. But
so then you go to the theater and look at the other actor who took the role and think, oh, God, I could have nailed that.
Not necessarily. You don't go to the theater, or you. Or you say, wow, like, I did a tremendous job, and I wish I had that opportunity.
Is it harder for you to sort of people watch now that people walking down the street go, hey, there's that guy?
Good question. It is a lovely thing to be recognized for your work. Yet it is not helpful for the your own observation of other people when they observe you before you get a chance to discreetly observe them. And I grew up, I went to Performing Arts High School, which is in Lincoln Center in Manhattan. I lived in Queens, and I had to take 4 trains each way to go to school every day. And it's a lot of ground to cover. And I think those years, I unknowingly absorbed more than and gained more insight in human behavior than I definitely learned in the acting classroom, and that was just done again through, first of all, how fascinating people are, and especially in a city like New York, where such a diversity of individuals, and you're assailed by, you know, every kind of
Like it or not.
Like it or not, yeah.
You've EP'd a couple of films in the past year or so, and I'm wondering if that was always a goal for you, or if now it's a matter of projects that you really think are important and want to see made, and therefore you've just sort of taken the helm.
Producing wasn't really a real goal of mine. I think the advantage to having some involvement on that level is that, you know, you're have a bit more of creative control. I think I'm way more interested in the prospect of directing one day. You know, sometimes it's an interesting process. It's an interesting process to be involved with rewrites and to kind of have a say in production decisions and things like that. But it's not my goal. I mean, I think if I found something really beautiful, I would want to bring that to life, and it would probably be a vehicle for me as either an actor or a director or something like that, and I would have to produce that, because on smaller films they're usually selling it on their main actors anyway in foreign territories. So essentially you are a producer by bringing yourself to the table, but then you have to kind of deal with other issues. But it's interesting to learn more, and
you've worked with so many extraordinary directors, and I'm sure that sort of each one brings a different thing to the project, but I wonder how differently they relate to actors and how much you have to not only adjust your performance based on the role that you're playing, but on the way that a director communicates and how much direction he or she will give you.
Yeah, the director is key. He's running the show, and you have to adjust, definitely, to not only the way that they communicate with you and other crew members and cast members, but their vision, which may differ from your own, their vision for the film and your character in particular. And
how much arguing do you like to do?
I don't like to argue. I'm a firm believer that the director, I like to believe in my director, first and foremost. If you believe in your director, which you ultimately have to do, then you have to be willing to relinquish certain, your position on a certain level. But if, you know, the interesting thing that usually transpires is there's usually a mutual level of respect, and an argument isn't necessary, but you may say, well, I don't see the character responding in this way at all, but and the director says, well, look, give me one like that and then we'll try one your way. So you do your best to give him his interpretation and see it from a different perspective, and then you try your way. And then he goes in the editing room and he uses his interpretation.
So you got a good shot at it.
And therefore, you want to be the director or the producer. But, you know, it's part of the game. You are kind of, your performance is partially sculpted by other people. And certain choices you may know better than they, because it is you. And certain things are more honest, but there are other aspects that are important, and you know, certain things don't work. You know, certain shots didn't work; they won't intercut well. There are a lot of reasons that your best moment may not be there. And the key to making a beautiful and complete, cohesive film is having all those magical moments work. And all the technical aspects of that process work during those moments, and that is very challenging.
So if for some reason the whole thing doesn't coalesce the way you were hoping it would, are you able to be satisfied just by thinking, I did my best performance in this, or does it feel like a sort of a disappointment?
It's hard to say. A lot of it is out of your hands, and like most things in life, and you have to accept that in life. And yes, I would like certain things. I would have liked more time to do certain things. I would have preferred things to be different on a set one day, and you know, I would. But none of that is really relevant. It is what it is, that's why it's really special when you can find something great and work with like-minded people that appreciate what you do, and you learn from them, and I also enjoy the process very much. I mean, I love my work, and I love how I've learned a lot about myself through fictional characters and other people, and learn about other. I've gained a tremendous amount of empathy from my work, and I'm grateful for that. And so there's always room for improvement, and that's what you strive to do. But at the same time, you have to accept.
My guest this hour is actor Adrian Brody. Let's speak to David in Fort Worth. Hi, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Guys.
Hi, David.
First of all, I want to say that I think when you talk to somebody who's been, you know, as successful as you have, you get, you know, all this praise. But I want to say, in the most honest critique, watching the what you did with the movie The Pianist, I really have to say that truly, me anyway, it truly changed my emotional response to all the material that's out there about World War II, and you know, Saving Private Ryan was a great film. It showed the battle scenes and whatnot, but I was actually emotionally sick after watching that movie, which is a good thing because it shows you what really took place, not just as Europe, you know, Europe as a whole, but Poland and that special section of the world. I guess that comment, aside from my question, I don't know what your background is, but it seemed like that surely had to affect you playing that role and going through some of the horrible things that took place. Did you do any? I don't know where your family's from, but were they there at that time? Did you do any research to make that really personal for you? Because it really seemed like, out of all the movies, all the material I've ever seen, that was, I mean, it was just astonishing what took place there.
Thank you, David. And it's very, very kind of you to say it in that way. And yes, I was emotionally sick too. When I saw that film and a large part of the process, and it is, you know, I often am asked about my personal connection to that, and I think regardless, I think the thing about having an opportunity like that as a young man is you get to, in a sense, meditate on something that you wouldn't want to give a lot of thought on. And life is full of pain and sadness, and these are not emotions we want to cultivate within ourselves. We want to kind of avoid them. And the process, I think, regardless, if it touched me from a family level or not, is that it, once you start that process and you really delve into that, you are kind of, you're given an insight into the depth of pain that some people have, and so many in that time in history have the misfortune of experiencing firsthand. And what that does is gives you, you know, a great deal of sadness personally, but it also changed my perspective permanently, in the sense that it made me appreciate so much that I took for granted. And it was also about the survival of the human spirit and what we can endure. And there is a lightness within all of that. And it was a very complex journey. I had to represent not only people who suffered tremendously in World War II, but my director had lost his parents. Roman Polanski had experienced direct tragedy in relation to that time period. And in a way, I knew it was almost a way for him to tell his own story through Spielman's story, which was a true story. So it was profoundly complex, that process, and took a long time for me to kind of come out of, so to speak. But I'm grateful that it touched you in that way, and it's touched a lot of people in that way, including myself. And I, you know, that is a real gift to be able to connect to that. Anyway, I'm getting the cue to stop rambling.
Special music. No, you're not rambling. It's great.
Okay.
Actor Adrian Brody is my guest. He's in town to receive the Star Award tonight at the AFI Dallas International Film Festival. There will also be a screening of his latest film, The Brothers Bloom. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
That is a clip from The Pianist, the film for which actor Adrian Brody won his Best Actor Academy Award. He is my guest this afternoon. I see you as you're listening to this piece, moving your hands in the same way. I guess it's hard. It really is hard to sort of separate yourself from that experience.
It really is, especially when you hear a piece that's as emotionally evocative as that.
My understanding is that you had to shoot the entire film in reverse chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
I would think the hardest thing about that would be not to bring this intense emotional experience that you have at the end of the film into the performance in the beginning before your character knows what's about to happen.
That's why I'm a professional.
I know, but...
but it is challenging, yes. It is, especially after you've kind of embraced something as difficult as that. Yeah, it is challenging. But I don't know. I somehow, you know, we shot in
you know, I had to make a physical transformation as well for the role, because you can't act as if you're emaciated, you know. And I was actually very healthy before I started the film, and I had to lose a tremendous amount of weight.
It's got to be hard to work at the top of your game when you feel physically awful.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't acting, so, and I think that is kind of what Roman wanted anyway, and you know, he is a genius director, and you know, there were moments where I, you know, in the end I had to climb over this wall, and that was the first day of shooting, and I had gotten down to 129 pounds.
Wow.
And I had no strength, and I told him that I don't think I can do it, and he didn't care. He said, you know, just do it. And I wasn't acting. I was shaking as I'm, you know, practically convulsing as I tried to get over the wall, and it was a very complicated crane shot, and so we had to do it a number of times, and I could hardly get over the wall. So, but that's how you can be really good when you're not having to act, when you are experiencing something and relating to that helplessness.
I wonder if once you've done something like that film, does that then inject a sort of confidence into anything else that you might want to undertake and think, well, if I did this, I can certainly do that?
It sure made everything easier. It made everything easier. Everything in life has become easier as a result of that experience. Yeah.
Do you enjoy the company of other actors?
Yes, very much so.
Are there people in your life that are particularly helpful in terms of talking about the craft, and other actors that you're very close to that you talk about everything but?
I choose not to talk about the craft when I'm not in an
interview.
Sorry,
does that sound ridiculous?
I don't sit with my fellow thespians and discuss, you know.
Stanislavski was a genius.
How did you find that? You know,
so you don't have those conversations?
No, I rarely do, and unless someone, you know, instigates it. I'm happy to talk about it because I love the process, you know, and I love to share. I love to share that and give people some insight into something that is pretty elusive even to myself. I mean, no matter how great you can be, you have to really be on your game in every moment. You have to kind of be able to be so malleable in that moment that you're, you know, letting go of the fact that, you know, you're having a rough day and you're supposed to be funny and it's 7 in the morning and you've got, you know, 12 people in a room looking at you and someone's coughing and you can't be self-conscious and you can't think about that, and you have to make what you're saying truthful and sound like it's the first time you've ever uttered it or thought it. And that is nerve-wracking, but also wonderfully rewarding when you personally feel that you've done it, regardless about how it may look. If it feels real to some extent, then that's a remarkable feeling. It's really amazing.
Do things like costume and sets, do they enhance your ability to do things at all?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the more you have to assist you in going further into that place, then the better, you know.
Are there roles that you wanted that you didn't get that now you think, thank God?
I'm very forgetful with things that I, not all things.
So you just let it go once it doesn't happen.
Not all things, but I choose not to harp on things I haven't been fortunate enough to get. I've been fortunate to work with incredibly creative people, but it's all okay. I don't know. I look at it. Who knows what's next? Who knows if, you know, I'll find something that'll really, you know, take me to another level and allow me to learn things that I didn't know, or it might be a long time before that comes my way, and I just kind of accept that.
Is there a different kind of challenge to you as an actor in a film like King Kong that we're not assuming that you're starving yourself for 6 months before? And in some ways, the film isn't as emotional. In all ways, the film's not as emotional. But you still have to feel that every bit as much as you feel Spielman.
Mm. Yeah, on the surface, when I read that, I said, wow, this would be so exciting. It'd be fun. It'd be fun. You know, I was looking to do something fun, and I still like to kind of, I gravitate towards lighter material, as in high school, which is a pretty, I told my mother recently I'm going to give up heavy dramatic roles and just do kind of adolescent stoner comedies, because there is definitely a market for that, and it was really liberating. It was so fun, and I tell you, go home at the end of the day, and, you know, I was laughing, hard to get through certain scenes, because they were that funny. And that is such a different process, and it's such less of a weight on your shoulders. So I've kind of embraced lightness for now. But what I didn't realize about King Kong was how challenging it was going to be. And that was 9 months. That was a 9-month shoot over a period of a year. I actually shot Hollywood Land on my hiatus. I worked that entire year. Which we shot that in like 6 weeks or whatever, and then I had a few weeks off, and I went back to New Zealand, and we finished. But you'd be surprised how difficult it is to connect to something when nothing remotely similar to the experience is taking place. So you're in a green room climbing over a box, but it's really a dinosaur, and...
Yes, yeah, so you have to sort of pretend.
You're on a rope and falling down, but you're really actually going underwater.
Do you go back to being a little kid and playing?
No, I don't. Maybe to some extent, but it's. I felt a lot of pressure to. It was harder to connect to things on an emotional level because they were so extreme and not happening. So it was actually very difficult because I couldn't just play as if I was a kid and like, wow, I'm scared. You have to connect to something. And fear, for instance, is a very difficult emotion to just conjure up. And if you're thinking of, all right, what experiences in my life can I relate to, like to running from a 25-foot gorilla that wants to kill me and... I'm in dress shoes in the middle of a jungle. I'm completely unprepared for this. And, you think of the days of taking the trains to high school and running for your life from gangs in Brooklyn. But, hey.
Were you a target specifically or is it just sort of the neighborhood?
Was I a target? No, I wasn't a target. I think growing up in New York, the odds are against you. You know, I thought I was pretty down when I was in high school. It's just that there are a lot of other kids who are down, and that's how it goes.
And your parents were always fine with the idea of you wanting to be an actor. They never thought,
No, they encouraged it. They, not even as a career decision. They just kind of embraced whatever felt right and was a kind of creative outlet, whatever it might be.
When you think about possibly directing, do you have a particular genre in mind or a style of film that you think you would go to first?
It's hard to say. I mean, I probably would do something that is contained, and I've often said I'd probably do something like an urban drama, something that I can relate to and. But who knows? I could do a comedy. I mean, I'm very open. And when it comes to, it's just a matter of what's speaking to me at that time.
Do you have a list of qualities in a director that you say to yourself, either I want to be this or I don't want to be that based on people you've worked with?
I haven't given it thought on that level.
I guess it has to be organic.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I would like to be a certain way, and you know, I may have shortcomings. But I can definitely communicate with actors. I grew up in the home of one of the most creative visual people I've ever met. So I have an extremely specific and heightened awareness to imagery. I know about film because I've been in many and I've read many scripts, both great and mediocre. And I just feel, you know, that eventually when I muster up the courage to do it, I have enough of the influences. And I've also worked with some of the best and most gifted directors ever. I mean, I worked with immensely talented people, completely diversely talented masters. Like, you know, I followed. Roman gave me a viewfinder as a gift, and that was a 6-month, 6-day shoot. And Roman didn't like to use a stand-in, so
you were
there, and Roman uses a viewfinder, which most directors don't use. Viewfinder is a little kind of device that shows you the different lens sizes, so you can kind of look through it as if you were looking through the camera to set where the camera would go, how you would stage the scene, you know, basically run a camera move. And I just soaked that up, and I couldn't have paid for that education.
I wonder if the photographer mother thing was something that bonded you to Owen Wilson when you worked together. His mother, of course, is Laura Wilson, very talented photographer as well.
Yeah, she's lovely. That's not what bonded me to Owen. I think, you know, Owen is a remarkable, gifted and kind soul, and has a fantastic sense of humor. So I think it was pretty instantaneous. We got along very well, and I consider him a dear friend. And you know, especially, and you're in India with a bunch of young creative guys. I mean, I think I bonded with that whole gang, and you're experiencing so many amazing things together. It's kind of difficult to ever forget. So, yeah. But Owen's mom came on set, and my mom came on set, and it was one happy family.
Adrian Brody is in town to receive the Star Award tonight at the AFI Dallas International Film Festival. There will be a screening of his new movie, The Brothers Bloom, as well. The movie opens in wide release on May 29th. Adrian, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.